Marijuana is in the news on an almost daily basis of late. It's legal for personal use in Washington State, which just opened its first pot stores. It's also legal in Colorado. Oregon and California both allow medical marijuana. California has a bunch of dispensaries. Oregon cities and counties have banned most of those temporarily. And both states once voted on legalizing marijuana for all adults and said no. Oregon will probably try again in November. The initiative of New Approach Oregon is not assured of a place on the ballot, but New Approach turned in a lot of signatures. We'll spend this hour getting familiar with the features of the proposed law. Two guests are with us. Peter Zuckerman is a spokesperson for New Approach Oregon. Peter, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
We also have Darian Stanford with us. He is a lawyer and a former prosecutor who prosecuted many drug crimes back in the day. Darian, thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
So, start with you, Peter. The Secretary of State gets a month to count the signatures. Any update on what's going on there and how many you put in?
Yeah, we turned 145,710 signatures. We need 87,213 valid signatures to qualify. So we're very confident that we will qualify. The Secretary of State is counting the signatures for various measures and hasn't quite gotten to ours. But, you know, we could get a we could officially qualify as soon as a couple weeks from now, maybe even as soon as the end of this week.
They have until August 2nd to do the counting, right?
They have until August 2nd. And so, yeah, she counts them as fast as they count them as fast as they can, but they don't necessarily tell us when they're going to be done.
So you have more than 50,000 spare signatures here. Is there any doubt in your mind it's going to get on the ballot?
I am confident we're going to qualify. I mean, we've made sure a large percentage of our signatures are valid, and I think I'm confident we will qualify. Yeah.
Let's talk about the organization New Approach Oregon and who makes it up and what makes it a new approach.
Well, it's a coalition of people who believe that treating marijuana use as a crime has failed and that it's time to try something different. And the measure that we're trying to win would treat marijuana, it would regulate it and tax it and legalize it in much the same way that beer and wine are treated, but even more restrictive.
More restrictive in what sense?
That there's more restrictions on where you can sell it, more restrictions on advertising. There's just more restrictions everywhere. But the law is based off of the ones that we use for liquor.
All right. Darian Stanford, give us some idea of what you saw when you were prosecuting drug cases when you were a prosecutor.
Well, I was a prosecutor from 2005 until 2010. And in fairness, it was in Multnomah County, which is sort of its own animal in the state of Oregon, as most people know. But one of the things that came clear to me there is I was in the drug unit for about a year and a half. And there's such a revolving door among users. And what I mean by that is you would arrest people. People would be arrested and prosecuted for possession of whatever type of drug, and they'd come through the system, and you would spend a lot of resources on these cases and a lot of time on these cases. And then if there was something that went wrong with the case, maybe their evidence wasn't as good as it could have been, and they were not convicted, well, the common expression was, see you again in a couple months. Or even if they went in and were convicted, you're going to see these people again, because a lot of the normal tools that you think of as a prosecutor, punishment, fine, putting people in jail or prison, aren't going to work with addicts. And so what I became familiar with as a prosecutor in Multnomah County in particular is programs such as the Stop Court and Community Court, and then there are other programs such as a diversion program called DISP, with people that are drunk or drugged driving. Those work. And what I like most about the approach with New Approach Oregon is this idea that 25% of any tax revenue is going to go to funding these sorts of treatment programs. When you're talking about drugs, I cannot think of a more effective tool. There just simply is not a more effective tool than these sort of treatment programs. And anything we can do to fund those, I think, will have a terrific impact on reducing crime rates.
These are more about rehabilitation, but there is a drug court in a couple of counties in our part of the region as well.
Right.
Is that the kind of thing you're talking about here, where the emphasis is on rehabilitation, getting off the drugs, and getting yourself together?
Absolutely. And And I think, again, all of these sorts of programs could use more funding, more counselors to watch people, more classes, more monitoring, and that is exactly what I'm talking about. Because remember, you're dealing oftentimes with many of these drugs, you're dealing with addicts, and so throwing somebody in jail for a little while is not going to get at the underlying problem.
When you were working in drug crime prosecution, did you have any flexibility in what you charged suspects with?
You do. You do generally, and I think that it is important to. It's one of the dilemmas. Prosecutors have a ton of power. They really do. They can look at a certain set of events and throw the book at somebody or not, as the case may be. It's a tremendous amount of responsibility. Let me give you just a case in point on some of the tools that prosecutors have. There's an enhancement law in Oregon about sentencing. For example, if you are dealing drugs, any kind of drug, within 1,000 feet of a school. Gets it. Yeah, I get it. It makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that school is very broadly defined. And so is there a church nearby where sometimes kids attend a Sunday school program or any kind of preschool or daycare? Hey, maybe that's a school, and I can jack up the penalty on this person.
So it becomes a very liberal sort of definition.
Right.
Darian Stanford's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Lawyer and former prosecutor Peter Zuckerman joins him. He's a spokesperson for New Approach Oregon. New Approach Oregon is behind the initiative aimed at having a marijuana vote on the November ballot. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange when we come back in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about the pending vote. It is not assured, but it could likely happen. A vote on legalizing marijuana for personal use in the state of Oregon, heading for the ballot potentially because of the number of signatures New Approach Oregon turned in, 140,000 signatures, and they needed not quite 90,000, so they have a whole bunch of spares as the Secretary of State counts that. We have from New Approach Oregon Peter Zuckerman, a spokesperson, joining us. Darian Stanford is a lawyer and former prosecutor. His docket including drug cases. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange to talk about the New Approach. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Peter Zuckerman, does the approach that New Approach is taking, it's going to be hard not to use the word approach today, I can see, does it resemble the methods used in the initiatives in Washington and Colorado?
You know, I really think it takes the best of the initiatives from Washington and Colorado and tailors them to Oregon. I mean, like with Washington, for example, you know, there's obviously a lot of similarities, but there's also some key differences. You know, one key difference is that in Oregon, we have the Oregon Liquor Control Commission overseeing regulated sales of marijuana. They have a lot of experience with doing this kind of thing with alcohol and with tobacco, and we think they could do a really good job with marijuana, and that they have that it would save us a lot of money so we didn't have to build a whole new government entity. Another big difference between us and Washington is that we are very specific in how the millions of dollars in tax revenue that would be generated, how it will be spent. You know, a quarter would go to drug treatment and prevention and mental health programs, 35% would go to state and local police, and 40% would go to school funding. And, you know, one of the goals there is that there would be a lot of money or a lot more money than there is for programs like drug prevention and drug education, where right now those sort of services are very underfunded.
It seems like you're trying to make this too good to pass up when you start talking about 35% to local police and 40% to schools.
Yeah, well, you know, we met with lawmakers. I mean, there's the projections range, but, you know, this measure will generate tens of millions, potentially, you know, in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And, you know, we talked to state officials and asked them what were the crucial services that needed the most funding. And this is what they told us really needed help.
Let's take some calls here. We'll start with Steve in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about Oregon's potential November vote on legalizing marijuana for personal use with Peter Zuckerman from New Approach Oregon and former prosecutor Darian Stanford.
Howdy. Those who don't remember history are doomed to repeat it, said Santayana. And we've got a case in the United States where we've already tried prohibition on another drug, and it was a total disaster. It increased the consumption of alcohol, put it all into the arms of gangs. We had drive-by shootings and so on. And a similar thing is happening slowly but surely with marijuana. To get out of that, however, you seem to have a big catch-22. The price of a gram of street weed, last I heard, is about $10. In Washington dispensaries, it's about $30. So you're paying three times the price. What is there to really encourage people to get off the streets and into the dispensaries?
All right. Excellent question. Thanks for that, Steve. And Peter Zuckerman, what about that? Because how do you stop a black market from remaining?
I think he's absolutely right that there's a significant price difference between the black market and the regulated market in Washington. And I think we've seen that people are really eager to buy it on the regulated market based on the crowds, but he's right that I think you need the prices to be closer to each other to really eliminate the black market. With Oregon's measure, we tax it very differently so that the price would remain competitive. We tax it at the grower level. The tax is lower, and there would be a lot of advantages of buying it on the regulated market. It would be tested. It would be labeled. It would be inspected. It would be in childproof containers. People would know exactly what they were getting. And as we saw with prohibition of alcohol, which I think is a very good analogy, that, you know, the black market tried really hard to compete with the regulated market. But once you have a regulated market that can have things like testing and accountability, people prefer to buy stuff there. And so I think that in Oregon especially, where the prices will be such that the regulated market can really compete with the black market will really shrivel up.
Darian Stanford, can we get your thoughts on this as well from a former prosecutor's viewpoint?
First of all, I appreciate the parallels with prohibition. I mean, it is going to be fun to sort of see this whole thing play out. One of the only differences, of course, is that was at the national level with prohibition and constitutional amendments, and here we're letting the states be laboratories for experiment, to use the line from the Federalist Papers. But I think everything Peter said is right. The markets have a way of achieving equilibrium over time, and I think that that's what's going to happen here. I also like the idea, again, sort of from the public safety perspective, of people having the ability to, rather than buy on the street or from a friend or whatever, buying from a store. It's more normal over time as we figure things out. It'll be easier. It'll be regulated. And I also put a lot of confidence in the OLCC. I did work with them as a prosecutor as well, and they're organized and they know what they're doing. I think as usage becomes more normal, you're going to want to go buy it in a store. You're going to want to go do it the right way.
Interesting time for the OLCC, Peter Zuckerman, because there have been some efforts, which are not very far front at this point, to do some more privatizing of the liquor industry in Oregon, the liquor sales business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this, to sell marijuana, the places that sold marijuana from the OLCC would be overseen by the OLCC. They would be inspected, they would be audited, they would be very, very tightly regulated. They would not be owned by the OLCC, but people would have to pay a licensing fee, and the OLCC would oversee licensing.
Let's talk about some of the basic components of the law then, because I realize as we're talking about at the grower level that we haven't even talked about how much any individual be allowed to possess, whether you could grow it for yourself, where you would have to buy it. Would it have to be only through the regulated market? So let's talk about all of these, Peter.
Yeah. You know, you would be able to buy and possess outside of your house up to 1 ounce. And I think another thing I think that's really important when you look at what it would do is that it also does not change a lot of things. You know, it would prohibit minors from selling, buying, manufacturing, possessing, or, you know, consuming marijuana. Minors couldn't even get within, couldn't even go into a store. And by minors, I mean by 21, people who are under 21. It would remain a felony to sell to minors. The roads would maintain their current DUI laws. But, you know, medical patients would have improved access to safe, secure, reliable, and quality-controlled marijuana. Drug-free workplace rules would stay the same. But what would be different is that there would be a regulated system that taxed marijuana to pay for crucial public services, and that the black market would shrivel. And that people would know what they were buying because the product would be labeled and tested and inspected and very closely regulated.
So could you not grow your own in your backyard patch?
There's a limited amount of home cultivation is allowed. The laws there are based on the ones that we use for home brewing. I mean, realistically, growing marijuana is complicated, and I think just as we see with home brewing, lots of people talk about doing it, but few people actually do it. And it's hard for me to imagine that lots of people are going to do that when they can buy a cheaper and very likely higher quality product from the regulated market. But there is there are provisions for limited home growth.
Cultivation. All right. We're talking with Peter Zuckerman from New Approach Oregon and Darian Stanford, a lawyer and former prosecutor. His docket included drug cases about New Approach Oregon's initiative, which at this point is only known as Initiative Petition Number 53, but could get a ballot measure name and number in the very near future because of the fact that they've turned in more than 140,000 signatures to put this on the ballot. They needed somewhere south of 90,000. So it looks like it's relatively certain that Oregon will be voting on this measure to legalize marijuana for personal use in November of this year. Join us on The Exchange with your questions, your comments, your thoughts about marijuana legalization and what form it should take, and whether you might even vote for this particular initiative as you hear it unfolding before you. Join us on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 around the region, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. You just mentioned, Peter Zuckerman, that you'll still maintain the drug-free workplace. I'm sure you both noticed the story of the fellow who was the first one to buy pot, I think in Spokane, and reported within a day or two that he was fired for his enthusiasm. Darian Stanford, are you concerned about any of the provisions like that that might happen under Oregon's law if this does become law?
In terms of people using in the workplace,
right,
and consequences? Well, if people are doing things in the workplace that negatively impact their ability to work, there are laws and rules and enforcement in place and lawyers to take care of employers and lawyers to take care of employees who are wrongfully terminated. There's a system in place, I think, already to deal with that. And in many ways, we are already dealing with how to use with medical marijuana, et cetera, in the workplace. So I think it'll be... There'll be some issues. They'll get some early publicity, but again, I think things will equal out. I mean, you have an obligation as employee to meet your duties to your employer, and that doesn't change with this law. You must use it responsibly.
As you look, Darian, at the at what happens as the sales unfold in the state of Washington, are you struck by anything there? Either, ooh, they did that really well, or oops, we will do that differently and better.
Yeah, that's a good question, and I think that I don't want to say the jury's still out, but it's been. One of the things that I've been looking at mostly is what I'll call drunk driving, or driving under the influence of intoxicants is the more formal title in Oregon. And, you know, there was this thought about, well, there's going to be some rapid spike because it's now legal in accidents and problems as a result of this, and that would be very severe. As far as I can tell, that is not happening at all. And so that was one thing I was curious to see, and I'm very pleasantly, I don't want to say surprised, but I'm happy that that isn't the case thus far. The results in Colorado and Washington are not showing that there's some spike. In fact, if I recall correctly, and Peter might have the data better than me, there's actually been something of a reduction in, we're not talking about alcohol, we're talking about drugged driving.
Yeah, in Colorado, there's been fatalities have gone down, accidents have stayed about flat, and we've seen something similar in Washington. Keep in mind that in Washington, marijuana use has been legal for about 6 months, and fatalities have gone down a little bit, and accidents have stayed about the same. So I think, you know, one difference is that police in Oregon would actually have more time to focus on keeping the roads safe, because right now in Oregon they arrest or cite 12,000 people a year for marijuana, and you know, that often is a distraction from dealing with more important issues like keeping the roads safe.
We're talking to Peter Zuckerman at New Approach Oregon and Darian Stanford, a former prosecutor, about the potential vote coming up in November, of which they are supporters, that would legalize marijuana in the state of Oregon should it pass. It has not gotten to the ballot yet, but it certainly could, given the number of petition signatures they put in. Here's Julie in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. Julie, go ahead.
I wanted to ask about what they mean by new approach. And I guess I'll put where I'm coming from out, and then they can let me know if that's what they mean. I was wondering if it's a new approach in that it's going to be a business and therefore taxable, and therefore it seems to me that it will perpetuate the dependency on drugs in society and keep us a little bit codependent rather than really raising the consciousness about and educating about drugs, so that we really don't even need a market. But I think the people who are going into business are going to become dependent on their livelihoods, you know, depending on making a profit and supporting them. And so it's all going to become a bureaucracy and another codependent kind of thing. That's my fear, and I wondered what's new about that.
All right. Thank you very much for that, Julie. Appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Peter, want to take that on?
Yeah. So the campaign is called New Approach Oregon because we believe that it's time for a new approach in how we handle marijuana, that the current black market approach has been ineffective. We've been treating marijuana use as a crime and been fighting the war on drugs for 40 years and spent more than $1 trillion on it, and the numbers make it clear it's just not working and that it's time to try something different. I think that the caller was right that, you know, education is absolutely crucial. And right now in Oregon, the people who are leading drug education in our state are largely black market drug dealers. They're the last people we want to have doing education in Oregon. But in Washington, thanks to their new law, there's money that's being spent, and there's an education campaign to educate people about marijuana. There are billboards up, there are ads, the health department has put out pamphlets. There's an effort to encourage parents to talk to their children. Frankly, they are having a conversation that we should have had in Oregon a very long time ago. So education is absolutely crucial, and that's one of the things I really like about this measure, is that there would be money in for education, and education would get done, because that's something I agree that Oregon really needs, and that using marijuana responsibly involves people being educated about it. They, you know, people should know you should not use marijuana if you are under 21, because your brain is still developing and it won't develop to its full potential. And so education is absolutely crucial, and right now we don't have any. And so I think a regulated approach would allow for that much more effectively than the current black market approach.
Julie's call struck a chord because I happened to read a column this morning by Michael Gerson, the former Bush speechwriter, writing in the Washington Post, and his column title is Corrupting Citizens for Fun and Profit, and he talks about states that are promoting legalized gambling and marijuana in some cases as like, hey, look at this, we'll make more money off these guys, but it's behavior that's not necessarily desirable. I mean, how do you get to where marijuana is not seen as this big. I mean, when it becomes more like red wine, let's think than like in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
I mean, I just think that's a matter of time.
Yeah.
Do you want to answer that more, Darren?
Time is the first thing that came to mind. Absolutely, that's what it takes. There's an adjustment period to any sort of significant social change where you think that it's the most absolute. It is bizarre. We can never accept this. And then after a couple years, maybe 5 years, I don't know how long. All of a sudden, it's just very normal. And I'm sure there were similar conversations in some ways after Prohibition was repealed, even though alcohol had been legalized earlier. People just normalized.
All right, we'll talk more with our guests and take more of our phone calls and emails about the potential legalization of marijuana in Oregon, potentially coming to the ballot in November. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange when we return. Back with our guests and with you in a minute 15. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about the potential for Oregon voting to legalize marijuana for personal use in November. The group New Approach Oregon submitted 140,000 petition signatures, needed around 87,000 and change. So there's a very good chance that initiative will make it onto the ballot in November. We're talking to Peter Zuckerman at New Approach Oregon and to Darian Stanford, a lawyer and former prosecutor. And you can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3776. Anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782 by email jx@jeffnet.org. Darren, you were just talking about how it will just take time for people to get used to the idea of having marijuana be part of daily life, so it is no longer a situation where people just want to get really high because they've got this opportunity, as opposed to being around all the time, where it becomes a lot more acceptable socially and the use is a bit more moderated as well, as it is now with a lot of alcoholic beverages. But there's the whole slippery slope argument that always comes in that needs to be addressed here. What happens if we say, okay, then marijuana's okay? Is there a next drug that somebody else wants to say is okay, Darian?
You know, the slippery slope arguments are a favorite of lawyers all the time.
On both sides.
On either way, if we do this, then look at the road we're heading down. And all I guess I can say is that we have the ability as rational human beings to study each drug or event or potential social change or legal change on a case-by-case basis, and I really don't see that as a legitimate concern.
I can add right now, if you want to keep people who are using marijuana off other drugs, you should separate the people selling marijuana from the people who are also selling methamphetamine and things that are chemically addictive. Right now, you know, a lot of dealers have a financial incentive to sell their clients on harder drugs and get them addicted to something. And under regulated sales, you could only buy marijuana from the places selling marijuana. And so it would be much better preventing that from happening. And there would be information and education being done instead of people being educated by the drug dealers who's selling it.
Let's take a call here from Tom in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking marijuana legalization with Peter Zuckerman and Darian Stanford.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I had just one comment. I know I listened to the previous caller. I think we all see moral hazard in a lot of these questions, but if you just look at the war on drugs and what that has done to so many lives, I think it pales into comparison. But I did have one question. I know that I read an article, it may have been from the Oregonian, I'm not really sure, that Washington has seen an uptick in youth use, and I wonder if you've heard about that and if you know what they plan on doing to deal with that. Or has Colorado seen an uptick in youth use as well? Do you know?
All right, let's find out. Thanks for that, Tom. Appreciate it. Peter Zuckerman, do you know?
The research I'm familiar with shows that it's actually gone down. And I think a good analogy here is with tobacco use, where we've seen that regulation and taxation to pay for education has been very effective in reducing tobacco use. and that the same thing would be happening under a regulated sales of marijuana, especially education of youth.
Doesn't that get to a bit of an apples and oranges argument, though? I mean, because part of the point of regulating tobacco and certainly taxing it so heavily is to get people to stop using it because it's so dangerous. People do not have many of the same feelings about marijuana.
Well, it is, you know, tobacco is a highly chemically addictive substance. So there clearly are some differences, absolutely. But a big difference with marijuana is right now there is no education done really about it. For youth, you know, drug education programs are just hardly, they barely exist at all, and that would change. And I think it is important that youth be educated about drugs, and that would be something that would be different.
All right, let us take another call. We have Jim, also in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Peter Zuckerman and Darian Stanford.
Yes, good morning. The little subject that I've been kicking around with people is, now if the OLCC is going to be supervising, shall we say, what can be done in a legal marijuana dispensary, let's compare it to a wine store. Somebody's going to come in and ask, what do you recommend, blah, blah, blah. They're going to be selling things from Oregon, Washington, California, New York, France, whatever. All right, question one, are they going to be able to retail marijuana from other states and other areas? Number two, it seems to me like it's going to blur the distinction between medical marijuana distributors and recreational marijuana distributors. As I go into any retail store, I expect to ask for advice and be given it.
All right, let's follow those up. Thanks for the call, Jim. Appreciate it. Peter?
So under the law right now, marijuana cannot pass through state lines. So all the marijuana sold in Oregon would be from Oregon. You know, if eventually we win a national policy, that could change. But immediately it's all just going to be from Oregon. Now, in terms of medical marijuana stores switching to sell recreational marijuana, I mean, I guess our law doesn't prohibit that. So I guess, you know, that'll just depend on how the market bears things out.
So they could be sold in one place. There's no proscription against that. You wouldn't keep the medical marijuana dispensary separate?
No, they don't have to be separate. They definitely can be, but I think that it's possible that some would switch to selling both. I think that is possible. But I should also be clear that this law does not at all impact the medical marijuana law. The medical marijuana law will still be in place and it won't be changed at all.
All right, but it sounds like there is a little fudging there. I mean, potentially a zone where there'd be some overlap.
I think there is some potential there. I mean, a lot of it also depends on the OLCC gets to make a lot of the rules and change the rules as the market changes because, you know, markets are always changing. And so they have a lot of rule-making power. So a lot of it would hinge on what they think is appropriate. They have a whole year to figure that out between when it would get voted in and when it would take effect, actually more than a year.
All right. I was going to ask about effective dates because Washington had a couple of phases here. They had the legalization followed months later by the retail sales. Is there a staggered start for the Oregon law if it should pass as well?
Yes. I mean, these things don't move quickly because you want to do it very deliberatively. And so after it got voted in, it would kick off a process of rulemaking. Our measure is incredibly detailed. It's 36 pages long. It's the longest measure I've ever seen, and it went through more than 50 drafts. And, you know, we got feedback from everyone from the governor's office to drug treatment specialists to tax experts. But, you know, there's still details that the OLCC would need to work out, and they would have more than a year to do that, and they would have a lot of control over how the rollout would actually look. But I think the chances are it would be staggered, yeah.
All right, let's go to Bill in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking marijuana legalization with Peter Zuckerman and Darian Stanford.
Yeah, very important subject, very, very important to have these debates, I think, both ways. I'm quite aware that marijuana has some medical benefit, and I'm quite aware that the criminal war on drugs has failed. But we need to keep in mind that marijuana is a toxic substance, just like tobacco and alcohol. So,
toxic in what sense, Bill?
It's toxic in the sense that it ruins some people's lives. Now, I'm sure that there must be people that can use marijuana recreationally and not be harmed. But it does. It's like tobacco. Tobacco is harmful for everyone, but then alcohol is not harmful for some people, and it's a very toxic substance for a lot of other people. Let's keep that in mind. And so is marijuana.
All right, thank you for
it's
that.
It's toxic in the sense that it damages their health and how they function in their lives.
All right, dependency, certainly. Thanks for that, Bill. Appreciate it. Peter, thoughts there? Or Darren?
I mean, I think that the major point here is that we need treatment programs for all kinds of addictions and all kinds. You know, marijuana isn't chemically addictive, but, you know, anything can be addictive, from video games to, you know, to anything else, to gambling. And addictions, and what we really need are addiction services and treatment programs. And right now there's just not much money for them. And this measure would help generate a lot of money so that could be done.
Is there an estimate on the amount of taxes you expect to bring in through this measure should it pass?
There's a Harvard economist did a study that found that at least $37 million would be generated a year in taxes, and at least $87 million would be generated in savings. Now, I would say these estimates are probably very conservative. I mean, that's per year, because the estimates in other states have turned out to be much more conservative than anybody thought, and we were using similar methods. So, I mean, we're looking at tens of millions to maybe hundreds of millions a year.
And why not allow any entity but the state to tax it? I know we had an Ashland City Council member in here yesterday. The City Council is considering going ahead and putting the ability to tax marijuana for recreational use on its books preemptively. I don't know, and we can ask Darren if that'll be grandfathered in, but why restrict the taxation power to just the state, Peter?
I'm not 100% sure if we actually do that, but there's reason to keep the taxes close to what they are to make sure that the price of marijuana on the regulated market is similar to what it is on the black market. It can be a little bit higher because people really do prefer to buy on a regulated market, but it has to be able to compete so that we get rid of the black market, because the black market is what's feeding drug cartels and what is, you know, feeding violent drug wars, and what is, you know, when we have a robust black market, drug dealers can more easily, for instance, go after kids. And so part of the goal of this is to get rid of the black market. And so we need to be able to compete with them to get rid of them.
I think it's also a major, I mean, this is sorry to use the phrase, but very much a new approach. And with that, you want to have control early on. And so maybe once this becomes normalized, we can get into local governments, et cetera. But early on, let's have one entity in charge as much as possible, so we assume as much control as we can.
All right, got about 3 minutes left here. Let's take a couple of calls. Pam and Dexter, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi. Well, real quick, I just have a response to what you guys were just talking about. It seems like it would be really wise to have a percentage of the taxes garnered from legalization and selling of marijuana to drug rehab and education. That would be another way to get it passed when people see it could actually really help with the problem.
25% allocated for that, yes.
Oh, there is. Okay, mm-hmm. I think that's really smart. One of the things I had heard on this radio and JPR was about Colorado was having issues in the emergency room from the edibles. And marijuana edibles, and that the doses are really, like, you'll eat one cookie, and it's like 10 doses in one cookie, and people were not able to handle that. And it just seems like that is a real problem. I was talking to a friend of mine who's in hospice dying of cancer, and she got a medical marijuana card and took a little bit, and she said she was up for 2 days, and it just really affected her adversely. While it did help her with some of her problems with the cancer medically, the dose was way too high. So has anybody thought about this? Because it sounds like that would be the biggest problem, would be the edibles and people not handling it properly. And maybe,
they
said there's gummy bear edibles that are like kids' candy. It just sounds wrong. So I'll listen on the radio. And thanks for doing this. I think it's really, it's this next best step. We got to get rid of the black market.
Right. So, thanks, Pam. Appreciate it. Peter?
Edibles are here right now, and they're unlabeled, and they're bought by black market drug dealers who don't test them, who don't even tell people what are in them. Under a regulated market, in Oregon in particular, the edibles would be tested. People would know exactly what they were getting. The dose would be on the package. They would be individually packaged in Oregon in childproof containers. There would be warnings on the packages that said things like there may be a delayed effect. There would be education available, very available, for people so that they could, if they were going to take edibles, they would be taken in a way that the people knew exactly what they were getting onto. And, I mean, I think that edibles, and new forms of marijuana are going to, that they're always going to come out, as years in the future. But the best approach to that is to educate people about them, to keep them out of the hands of children, to package them, to regulate them, to test them, to inspect them, and to label them so that people who are taking them can know exactly what they're doing. And Oregon has very, very strict labeling and testing rules that I think would really address that issue.
All right, we'll know within the next 2 weeks whether this will actually end up on the November ballot, because that's when the signature counting should be finished. Peter Zuckermans with New Approach Oregon, Darian Stanford, lawyer and former prosecutor, thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange. Wednesday on the Jefferson Exchange, our Vents Day segment will include a discussion of whether grizzlies should be reintroduced in California and what we think about domestic drones. That's tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. Our producer is Charlotte Duren. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening and have a great day.